let yourself start sliding, it's like you just shoot off like a rocket, and it's a freaky feeling, but you just have to there's a YouTube video that I watched beforehand that shows you, okay, you move it over this way, move it over that way, and you just have to know the right position to plant your ice axe in.
Welcome back to the Non-Standard 14er podcast, the podcast that talks about everything the route description leaves out about hiking and climbing Colorado's 14ers. We're back at it again, talking about Long's Peak. We're talking about Long's Peak in summer and winter, and the various subsections like the loft and trough and ledges and home stretch. Joining the podcast today is a returning guest, Tornado Man.
Yo, folks.
And our guest today is David, who's done Long's Peak several times, including in calendar winter. So welcome to the podcast, David.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot for joining us, David.
Sure.
We kind of started this podcast, I don't know, 4, 5 years ago. I've been kind of slacking off lately, but the kind of the ethos of it is just kind of get together with friends and talk 14ers. We've had some authors on the podcast, but I think our most popular episodes are just getting some diverse people who have done different routes on different 14ers and kind of debating the different ways to do 14ers. So like our specific, we had a couple people talk Little Bear one time, and Tornado Man was part of that one. And we had debated, S Ridge versus the standard on Snowmass and Capitol Peak. And those have been our more popular episodes as far as when I look at the listeners and downloads. No pressure, just kind of 14er enthusiasts talking mountains.
All right.
I was reviewing your trip reports. Really enjoy your the photos that you do, but like the February compared to March this year versus that year versus the ton of variability on how much snow is up on that those backside of longs and stuff.
Yeah.
So what have you been doing this summer? What did you do last year as far as 14ers?
Oh, it's just been quite a lot of variety. I've been ever since I finished the 14ers back in 2019, I decided I didn't want to really pursue any particular list out there, so I've just been kind of doing a little bit of this, that, and everything, and trying to get out more times with other folks out there instead of being a loner a lot of the times. And recently I realized I was already about halfway towards doing a second lap of the 14ers, which I didn't realize. If there's like friends I got that are still on their first lap, it makes it easy to say, oh yeah, I can do that because I still need a number two on that one or
Okay.
whatever. So it's been good to doing that.
How long did it take you to do all of them? When did you start?
Oh, I mean, the first one was actually Long's Peak way back in 2001, but I don't even think I'm not even sure if I was aware of the term 14er back in those days. And it's like over the next few years, I think maybe once or twice I went out with some friend on some other one, and it wasn't until several years later that I started actually realizing, okay, yeah, there's this thing out there called 14ers, and it's like, oh yeah, maybe I'll do a few of them. But I mean, actually, I'd actually done all the 13ers in Rocky Mountain National Park before I ever really got going on the 14ers, because it just seems like the 14ers were so far away, and once I pretty much cleaned up the 13ers in Rocky Mountain, and it was like, oh well, I can go do Bear Stack, I can do Grays and Torreys, and as did those, like, well, it's not that much farther to Massive, and oh, it's not that much farther to Princeton, and it just kind of grew out the there. So and then before I knew it, boom, I'm going and doing them all.
And you mostly do them by yourself? Is that right?
I think quite a lot of them. In the beginning, I did by myself. And then I think a couple of the easier ones, I'd get my brother to go along with. But I think he eventually decided that he was more of a mountain lakes kind of person than a summit kind of person, and wasn't too much in for the big, huge, long days. But then over the years, I gradually met up with a few folks that I've done like hikes and geologic time. We've done quite a few hikes together. And then, like I said, over this last year or so, since I've been finished, I've been reaching out more to other folks, and I've been out with several times with Yakdlev13 is his username. We've done multiple peaks together. He's a great guy, and just several other folks that have been meeting. So it's still kind of a mixture because I'm mainly available on Saturdays most of the time, and sometimes I'll do easier routes. Sometimes I've been getting more and more into class five stuff, which I enjoy, which not all my friends do. And so finding somebody that is interested in the same stuff and it's sort of kind of a similar pace as you and is available at the same time, it's just kind of tricky sometimes. So when I can find people, I go out with them, and if not, or they're not interested in whatever goal that's at my top of my list, then sometimes I'll still go out solo. So, but I try to keep it mixed up.
So that's one thing I'd love to do an episode on too, is kind of people who want to do the 14ers via class five routes.
Yeah.
What are you out there? What's the classic one that comes to mind is the cables route on longs, but what other class five routes are kind of like the, I know there's some routes on like the Crestones that are pretty, that have, like Ellingwood Arete. Is that the one on the Crestones that's pretty popular? What other class
Yeah.
fives?
Well, like the Little Bear, if you do the what is it, the
Black
West Ridge
Hand.
Direct, heavy, which it's like wicked exposure the whole time, just a small narrow little thing, and you fall off via either way. Is like, I think I wrote up a trip report on that, and I have a somewhat sadistic sense of humor, and so it's like, well, if you fall off in the chimney, at least you'll have the advantage that your body will be laying on the main trail for search and rescue to easily come collect you. So.
Okay, so that's Little Bear. What else have you? What other class five, if you want to do the 14ers via fives?
Let's see what. Well, yeah, there's not. I haven't really. I guess there's not a huge amount out there, but some of them even just. This one's not class five, but you mentioned earlier the Snowmass Esridge. That's more like a good solid scrambly three on there. And actually, there's some though. Certain ones. Sometimes I'll go out and on a relatively easy peak, and I'll find like one little rock wall or something on there that's like totally gratuitous and not necessary at all, but it's like, dude, that looks sweet. And I'll just throw in little features like that just to kind of build up some skill and comfort and whatnot. Because I mean, after all, if you get something that's 30 feet tall wall, it's much safer to go out there and experiment on that than it is to take a 1,000 foot wall and commit yourself. So it's like, I'm the kind of guy that I'm comfortable in class five stuff, but I haven't ever really done any major serious long continuous routes there. It's usually like just relatively short little stints there, and even though I could probably handle bigger ones, but I tend to take a pretty cautious approach when it comes to. I don't ever have ropes or anything when I'm out there, and so I don't like taking big huge leaps in what I do, because I want to make sure that I gradually grow up my skills on that. And so whenever I'm doing something, even if it's like wickedly exposed along the edge of a cliff, kind of thing, it's like, oh, okay, I've done this before. This is just a step above whatever I'm used to. So just take it slow, take it careful, test the holds, and so forth. And so I just little by little, I expand out and do harder and harder stuff.
Nice. Because I like your idea of trying to figure out like a 30-foot wall. Because like there's some like routes you could do on Quandary, or you could do, I know you could do that like left side of like Handies even. You can make it like a scramble. Yeah, but there's some clever ways to get some class five scrambles on the 14ers. Tornado Man, have you done Vestal yet? I know you were working through the Centennials.
No, I haven't made it out there yet. All I managed last year was Jones and Niagara. I guess one of those is one of the new LiDAR ones. Made a trip out to Ruby Basin in September, but it just snowed. And I ended up getting very close to Turret, and it was all ice and snow on the boulders with huge trap doors. And I ended up bailing at like 13.6. So not a huge year on the scent, but.
Yeah, I didn't do anything last year except Ice Mountain and the North Apostle.
The approach for those not very fun, but I liked ice. Getting up there isn't exactly great.
Yep, for some beta on that one. I haven't done that route yet.
I've got a picture or two. It's kind of hard to find, but it's right before you get to the you go across that gully and then the right side of it that's in the standard description. If you look above you, there's like a sandy gully that then kind of ends in this little weird chimney move. Then once you're up that chimney, you just walk to the summit, class two, maybe two plus. So it's an interesting alternative.
Well, let's talk some Long's Peak. Why the hell do you want to do Long's Peak in the winter? Or what got you? Because it's brutal in the summer, over 5,000 feet of elevation gain, at least 15 miles. Why would you want to do it in the winter?
Well, I mean, it's kind of like why would you do any of them? I kind of think it's just one of those things where, I actually get the first time I got into a winter summiting was I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to get a reservation for Culebra, so let's try to do it in the winter. But I was like, well, I should probably do some test hikes at first. So on January 1st, 2019, I went out and did a quandary, and it was one of those things where it was like the absolute most perfect bluebird winter day you've ever seen in the world. Wow, this place looks beautiful now. And so it's a whole new experience out there. And then you get the days where it's not so bluebirdy, and you get the howling winds out there, and you got stuff coated in ice, and sometimes you got fog raising up. It's just there's a whole new level of drama and excitement. It's like it's a whole nother mountain out there, and Long's Peak is basically in my backyard. And like I said, it was the first 14er I did, and it's you don't have to drive for 8 hours on icy roads like you do to get to San Juan's. So it was like, hey, let's give it a try. And so actually, my friend Gio and I think it's probably I don't know a couple of winters ago now, we tried it out at the start of winter, and it was one of those things where it's like very low snow year. So it's like, oh, hey, we can go tag it. And we get up to the boulder field, and then Gio ends up with a sprained ankle, and so we had to bail. I was like, oh, no. And so then I've up to that point I'd had very few times where I'd ever had to turn back on a peak, and so it's always one of those things that kind of galled me. It's like, oh, okay, I gotta go back there and get that now. And so that kind of put it up there on my list. And so then I went out and tried the keyhole route as the a practice one on there. And this time it was not a low snow time. I get up there, and at the top of the trough, snow at like 45 degree angle. And I on that first trip, I did not have the right equipment with me. I had like a floppy pair of boots with strap-on crampons there, and I'd actually accidentally kicked them off like twice going across the ledges, and had to like limp over until I get on a little rock perch and reapply them sitting on the side of a basically the side of a cliff. And it was like, okay, that was not very fun. And get up there and get to the narrows, is like, okay, I cannot do that on here. It's like, if these things fall off in there, I'm probably done for. So there I am on longs, and so now I've got, okay, now I've gone after it a couple times and not got it. So that just kind of fires me up the more to get there. And so then I went back the following week actually, and did it with mountaineering boots and crampons and a couple of ice axes and stuff, and got across it at that time. But whoo, that was quite a duty of a time. And then went down the cables route without ever having done the route before, but had a GPX loaded. And since it was really overly historically loaded, I guess, very rare conditions that you can actually just kind of walk up and down the cables, but that occasion it was. And so I was able to easily do a descent on that. But of course, that wasn't actually during calendar winter. So then I had to go back and do it for real there. And of course, I get up there and I say, okay, well, now I've already seen narrows when it's totally loaded. So this time, everybody says it's windswept, it's hit by the sun, it'll be nice and clear. I get up there and say, like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. It's like, it's more loaded than it was the last time. And I was like, but the funny thing is, there's this one guy, Logan, that he had overtaken me on that first time and put tracks across the narrows. And lo and behold, without me knowing anything about it, he went up like the day before I did. When I went back on winter again, he put tracks across there. I was like, oh,
Second
Logan.
time.
It's like, Twice in a row, the guy puts the tracks across the narrows for me. And so, of course, that time I went back there, I finally got up the top and scored the summit in the calendar winter. So it was like, woohoo, finally got it.
Like the did the narrows pucker yet? Were you pretty nervous? Like, 'cause it's, I mean,
Oh, yeah.
the photos on your trip report looks like if you would slide, you're whoo.
Yeah, so I mean, basically, the conditions were there that there was essentially no rock exposed anywhere near the route, and so the whole way through, you're just kick stepping in with crampons, and then I had a ice axe in one hand, held like a dagger style, and an ice tool, a curved one, slamming into the snow, and so basically the whole entire time, I've got nothing holding me onto the side of the mountain except the snow. Kicking my crampons in and then putting in the ice axe and tools on there. That's it. So it's like, it's really kind of a creepy feeling to know. It's like, okay, if this snow gives way, I'm done. And
Ooh.
it's like, that just gave me shivers. And of course, that one time I was going across there, I spaced out and didn't think to bring a helmet. And I'm like three quarters of the way across the narrows. And all of a sudden, I'm not sure if it was a rock or a chunk of ice or what, but I heard something up above me, and before I could even react, bam! Just right on top of the head, just got nailed by something, and that like freaked me out. And so I was like, okay, I got to start moving fast. And so then, as soon as I take my next step over there, I kick my foot into a spot where Logan had previously kicked a step in, and when I put my foot there, the snow like started caving in, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches or something, Not a huge amount, but just enough that it, I when you've already just been hit in the head, and then you start feeling the snow, which is the only thing holding on the side of the mountain, starts to give way. It's like, ah! And so then I pull my foot out of that one, and I kick a new step in, and I'm like in full on panic mode, just slamming the ice axes in, moving my feet as fast as I can, and getting out away from there. Then I get down to the end of the narrows, and there's no more tracks, and it's like, what in the world? Like, oh my goodness, the tracks stopped, but we're not done yet. What happened to those guys? Like, I'm
Nothing.
like about to freak out there, and then I look like straight up and say, oh, whoa, they climbed up that. Like, oh man. And I look back, and I'm guessing either Logan or whoever was in front there must have come out a little too far and was down a little bit below the route, and then just scrambled up some rocks there, and then I guess Sydney was probably following and saw that and just curved up along, hit more of the normal route and got there. But at this point, I was not about to backtrack onto the narrows again out to where I nearly got clobbered there. So it's like, well, let's just climb up this thing. And actually, as soon as I grabbed onto the bare rock, it's kind of like there's like a big relief. It's like, ah, solid rock. I like rocks. It's like, this is good. It's like, because I had enough of it hanging on the snow there. And so it's like that was what inspired me once I got up there. It's like, okay, I do not want to go back across that thing. And that's when I was like, okay, well, I took some pictures from the boulder field. That the cables look pretty loaded, pretty solid filled in. It's like, yeah, this is the day I'm gonna go check that out.
It's, but is it hard to transition when you have cramp? Like you have full ice crampons, right? So is it hard to transition from snow to rock with your feet?
Yes, so I'm starting to mix the trips together now since I did so many in a small window there. But yeah, on one of the occasions, I think it was must have been when I'd come back, I had a brief section at the start of the Narrows where I was like did have crampons on solid rock, and that's rather awkward going across. And so yeah, that was that second time when I actually made the comment. And so the way back, I decided to take the crampons off and just switch to micro spikes because I wanted to have something to give me a little traction in case I hit some ice in there. But it's a lot less awkward to walk over rocks with micro spikes than it is with
Ooh,
crampons. So
yeah, I
yeah,
got it.
I pretty much, if I'm doing something really serious, I'll have both crampons and micro spikes in my pack so that I can transition as needed.
What other snow climbs have you done to get prepare yourself for summiting longs? in the winter.
Also, I've done a few years ago, I did Lackawanna. I think it was probably a spring climb, just going up a couloir. And
Where?
then actually in between the attempts on longs, I went out with a geo to a Loveland ski area. This was like springtime after they'd already closed, and we found a steep area of snow there that was nicely consolidated. And I went up there, and I wore my mountaineering boots with the crampons and that, and I like tested it out and everything, made sure I could kick step, make sure I could step sideways, I could put my heels in, I could, kick and slam in that any and every direction. I did everything I could to try to knock them off my feet. It was, hitting it as hard as I could. And I made sure I say, okay, there's nothing I can do to get these guys knocked off my feet. These guys are rock solid. So I knew I could trust my crampons at that point. And so then I set us took the crampons off, set all my gear aside, and then grabbed out the ice axe. It's like, okay, let's see if I can make this work. And so just do all the four positions. You start, feet first on your rear, feet first on your stomach, and you flip around, head first on your stomach, head first on your back. And it's like, that's the freakiest one. It's like you lay down on your back and you're sliding head first
Oh, look at that.
down there. It's like
Oh,
as
and then
soon as you like
self-arrest.
let yourself start sliding, it's like you just shoot off like a rocket, and it's a freaky feeling. But you just have to, there's a YouTube video that I watched beforehand that shows you, okay, you move it over this way, move it over that way, and you just have to know the right position to plant your ice axe in, and then it just spins your body around, and then you get to where you're on your belly, feet down, and then you just can lock yourself in. And so I practiced all four of those positions there, and made sure I could rest quickly and effectively on that. And so I knew that okay, when I'm up on longs, I might have an occasion where I may need to use my
Go
peripherals. So
backwards.
it's like, that's not when you're about to careen over the East Face, that's not when you want to practice yourself. You want to have it down pat before you're any chance at all of actually needing to use it.
That's smart. That's, I think more people should prepare or know how to self-arrest their ice axe. I've heard people go to St. Mary's Glacier in the summer if they want to
Yeah, that's a good
practice, like on
place.
the just on some ice, just to get the confidence with doing that.
Every single winter, I'll go out at least once and practice my self-arrest skills, just so that I make sure I'm sharp. And I pretty much, I mean, ice axe is such a small, lightweight piece of equipment that I carry it with me every single time I'm out in winter, even if I'm doing it, beer stat or whatever. I just keep it all the time just because. And besides, it kind of looks cool anyway, so
That it
why
makes
not?
better pictures. You're making it makes badass pictures. But you can get a hot, high snow year. Like we did the Collegiate West on the Colorado Trail mid-July, and we probably crossed 60 snowfields, like Lake Ann Pass and some of those. I would love to have had a ice axe. I guess I'm understanding the case for the winter of longs, because it's actually not any longer than the summer route, right? You can easily get to the same standard trailhead, the ranger station, during winter as you can in summer.
Yeah, the ranger station, the trailhead there is plowed in winter, and they even have at least a couple of the restrooms are open, so it's very convenient that way. And then
And then
if
do you have to snowshoe at all through the Goblins Forest or
you're, yeah, well, so I typically would bring them with me, but the thing about longs is even in wintertime, there's a remarkable number of folks that go up there, at least as far as like. Definitely the Chasm Lake turn
Chasm
off
Lake?
is oftentimes it's so packed in there you could probably just about get away without needing any snowshoes on most days, unless it's like immediately after a big storm. And then the
Okay.
boulder field is kind of a hit and miss. Sometimes it's firmly packed snow in between the rocks, and it's easy to cruise over. Sometimes it's a trap door stuff where anytime you step on the snow, you plunge in who knows how far, and oftentimes can find water sitting down there, and other times you're like rock hopping, and so it's incredibly variable there. So it's kind of one of those things of how much do you want to trust that the trail is packed down, and how much do you want to carry extra weight on a already rather long day like that, versus
Right.
how much do you want to potentially suffer with the pulse tolling and the other stuff. So it's kind of a give and take.
There's other 14ers you can't even get close to. Like the summer trailhead's so much closer to the than the winter trailhead. Like doing
Oh,
like not Quandary, doing Humboldt. We've done Humboldt in the winter, trying to do from the Rainbow side, and it's another 3 or 4 miles, even just snowshoeing on that trail, and no one's on that trail, so you're breaking trail yourself. I can see why you're making the point for longs. It sounded crazy to me, but it sounds easy when you say it.
yeah. Oh, wait, it was that easy. It's doing longs in winter is quite an undertaking. The cables route is a shorter route to do it, but then you have to deal with that short little section of class five there. And
The class
I
five,
did
right?
practice run and just in the lead up to winter, and just getting up to the base of that, there I underestimated the effort required there. And then I hadn't really researched the route adequately at that point, and so I got up there and was like, okay, where am I supposed to go from here? And it's like afterwards, I went and I'd taken a bunch of photos up there, and I went and looked it all up and compared it to a bunch of trip reports, and eventually I was able to spot out in the pictures, okay, oh right, there's where it is. Okay, this is that, and so I took all those photos and all the stuff from other people's trips report and compiled them into one trip report for myself, and with the idea that one of these days, maybe not necessarily this winter, but if not, then sometime in the next winter or two, I'd like to go up there and try that route again and see if I can actually do the whole thing. But I think probably though I need to do it in summertime when it's dry first, so I can make sure that I'm pretty confident I should be able to handle it fairly easy when it's dry in summer. But probably good to prove that out first and get a feel for what it's like, and then decide, okay, how sketchy is this likely to be in winter, and then figure out if I am up for that, or if I maybe need to make friends with some folks that actually carry ropes up there and say,
Yeah,
hey,
right.
belay me up this.
You belay him, right? So is it bolted, do you know, or is it trad climbing? Are you putting in your own protection if you wanted to do it?
Well, there's like I think two or three bolts that are permanently mounted on the mountain. Although I think I remember reading somewhere that I think it was the top bolt just recently disappeared, like within, I don't know, the last I don't know, 6 months or something like that. I think somebody mentioned that, but I don't know if that was I can't remember if that's been verified or if somebody just wasn't spotting it or what. But I think it's one of those things where you probably need to be prepared to be able to place your own protection if you're doing it. But there's some folks that at least in summertime will do it without using ropes. But and at one point I had gotten it in my head that there was a few folks that had done it in winter without protection. But then the night before I went out and did my recon thing on the cables, I was reviewing reports. It's like, oh, let's see. Okay, he used ropes. Oh, he used ropes. Oh, he was using ropes. Oh, and so was he. Whoa. Okay.
Pretty
It looks
pattern.
like nobody has done this without ropes in winter. It's like, oh, I might be in trouble here, but oh well, it's just a recon trip anyway. So I got up to the base of it, and it's like, yeah, I think I see why they use ropes. Okay, well, let's get an awesome view of the East Face. You stop right at the it's chasm view, I think is what it's called. And I it was one of those things where as I was starting to come up to the base of where the class five was, I was kind of real zooming in on the snow conditions, because there wasn't a whole lot of snow there, but there's just one snow field there that it was deep enough I was plunging to my knees, and I was starting to get a little uneasy there. It's like, okay, how stable is this? It's not a big field, but it's like I don't want it to slide on me. But thankfully there was like the small little crust on the top, and I didn't feel any other layers underneath there, and nothing obvious. But I was very tuned in to paying attention to that, that I kind of wasn't even paying a whole lot of attention to the surroundings. And then so when I got up to the chasm view, it was like I had my head down checking out the things and huffing and puffing up there, and then I like sat down and I looked up, and it was like boom, there's the East Face right in front of me. It's like, oh my goodness. It's like I didn't even realize I was like right on top of the East Face there. I was just like, wow, this is incredible. So it's like that was just such an amazing view. It's like I didn't even care at that point about the summit. It's like, wow, this is my day here. It's like this is just freaking awesome. So that
Wait,
made the whole thing worth it right there.
is the East Face what they call a diamond? Are they the same thing
Yeah.
or are they different? Is
I
that flat iconic photo of Longs? That's the East Face
yeah.
or the diamond? Okay,
Yeah, I
but like,
believe so.
I'm trying to get myself oriented. So I did the loft route. I did the up the loft, got Meeker, and then came down the keyhole. So where's
Yeah,
the
so that's
cable
basically
drop?
the opposite side of the route from cables, the loft
Okay,
is.
so the standard goes up from the ranger station for a while and then splits off. And basically, I guess if it's like the, let's say the diamond is the center of the clock, it splits there at 6 o'clock, right? And then the standard goes around towards like 3 o'clock, and the boulder field's kind of like 2 o'clock.
Well, so once you get up to Chasm Lake, you'd be kind of facing the east face at that point. You cut off to your right and you circle around Mount Lady Washington, basically kind of make a loop, and then
The standard
you're made
splits off
up.
before Chasm. Does the standard, the keyhole route split off before Chasm Lake?
It splits off right at the Chasm Lake turnoff, so right where that the
Confusing.
world's most scenic toilet is, where you can. Sitting there, you go straight to go out to Chasm Lake, or you cut off to the right, and you basically make a big loop around Mount Lady Washington, and you
Washington,
hit
yeah,
Boulder
and then
Field.
you go to the boulder field. Got it. Okay. So you're circling
Because
around
you're
that.
in the Boulder Field, you either kind of curve off to the right to get to the keyhole, or you just go directly straight ahead, more or less, to get to the cables route, which is right along the edge of the East Face.
Okay, that's my question. So you go through the boulder field to get to the cables route.
Yes.
And so I'm confusing the other side when you go from like the loft side and they go up like Lamb Slide or whatever, or like the what's the other ones?
Yeah,
There's
and
another
there's
like.
also a Keener's routers over there. That's where the most people that do a ski descent off of Longs, they'll go down Keener's there. But that one's it's even longer than the standard approach. Because you start with like Sand Beach Lake down in Wild Basin area, and
Yeah, you're
it's
coming from
like
the other side.
I think like 6,000 or so feet, something like that. So it's a big long day, but if you want to do a ski descent, that's I think in even that one, it sounds like it's fairly rare for that to actually be in from the summit there. But under certain conditions, if you hit it just right, kind of like with cables, every once in a while you'll get this window of a little bit of time where it's just completely filled in with snow, and you can go down the thing. But I don't know if anybody skied the cable side or not. That would be rather dicey. But I know some folks have definitely done a ski descent from the Kearner side, or however you say that.
Yeah, I'm getting this confused. Okay, there's Keeners, and then there's a Keplinger's Gouwar too, right?
Oh yeah. Oh wait. Yeah. No,
I think
Kepplinger's, I think.
Keplinger's
That's what I meant to
that's a
say. I think
ski one.
that's the ski one. Yeah,
Yeah, that's the one you
there's so
come
many
from,
routes
Copeland
on
Lake.
Longs.
Yeah, so I'm trying to get my I got my roach in front of me trying to look at the topo map here. Because there's like so many different like phases in Longs between the Goblin's Forest and then like the boulder field and then what you got the keyhole and then you got the
The ledges,
trough,
the trough,
ledges,
and then the
narrows, home
crevices, the home
stretch.
stretch. That's one of the things I like about Longs compared to. Bras or Quandary or whatever. It's like a lot of the routes, you just kind of, okay, here's the trailhead. You'll go up, and there it is. So it's like it's kind of a little bit on the boring side, but Longs has, kind of a lot more personality, at least in my view. You get all these different features, the boulder field, you get the iconic keyhole, you get the ledges, which be dramatic at the shooting up the trough, and you get the narrows are, a classic there with all the exposure, and then a big punch up the home stretch. So it's you get constant variety. It's not just a one continuous slug up a nonstop slope. It's like go up here, go around, go down a little bit, go up here, go along this narrow ledge, and there's like all sorts of stuff going on, and that's just on the standard route. Then you have all these other routes you
Right.
can do: Kearners, Keplinger's, Loft, Keyhole Ridge. There's so many ways to do that mountain.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what other mountain is even comparable in the in, as far as like the phases. Like Pyramid kind of has like the switchbacks from, Crater Lake, and then you have the amphitheater and then like the hundred a thousand a suck, and then you kind of got like all the scrambling. But what other what do you think? What other 14er has the phases or the different sections, like Long says.
I don't know if I can think of anyone as quite as interesting than that. You got a few little phases on like a Wetterhorn, nice little steps at the end there, and I mean guess like on the Crestones,
Oh, two cores, yeah.
boring approach, and you got Brockingham Pass, and you get some gullies and stuff,
Red
and
Gully. I think
yeah.
Maroon, you've got a couple things where you have like the approach, the 2,800 feet of suck,
Oh, yeah.
then gully crossover gully, and then the kind of scramble up the top.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, what about that? I was trying to think of the Wilson group. Is there a distinct phases in like Wilson or Wilson Peak?
Well, if you do the Al Dente Wilson Traverse, you get some but I went back at, I've actually done that now twice. First time I did the standard traverse on there, and the second time because I've caught on to the 14er sub summits, I realized they added a new sub summit with a pinpoint up on the ridge, which it actually shows up in the description for the standard El Dente Wilson Traverse, but it shows it's like a picture of some basically some guindarms there that they tell you to go down around on the right to bypass it, and then I realized that, oh hey, this is a 14er sub summit, I gotta go get that. So I went back and did, I stayed almost completely ridge direct the whole way, like I don't know, probably 90, 95% of the way, and including a pinpoint there, which I don't know if you're into 14 or sub summits or not, but there's some pretty sweet ones out there, like Northeast Crestone. Oh my goodness, that was like so delightfully fun there, and pinpoint there, that going up those guindarms, it was like it's like one of those castles like out of Disney or something like that,
Yeah, it's
just
like pipe
jagged big
organs.
rock towers, and you just, I was like, I had heard somebody say that it was, probably class five or so, and and so I was like, well, okay, let's just go check it out, and so I just went up there, and it's like, okay, well, okay, this hold works, okay, and go up here, okay, this still work, okay, oh, this, whoo, wow, this is pretty exposed, oh, this is cool, man, like, and I just kept going and got up to the top, I was like, wow, this is sweet, so it's like. To me, a lot of these sub summits like that, Pinpoint, Northeast Crestone, some of those are more fun than the 14ers themselves, because you've got some class five action, and some of them, if you go around the other side of Pinpoint, I think you can do it class three on that side, and likewise Northeast Crestone, depending on how you wind and weave it, you can probably keep it class four there, but why waste some good class five that's right next to it when you can spice it up a little bit? So I've been
What's the
really inclined to
definition?
routes like that.
What's the definition of a sub summit?
So sub summits are ones that are above 14,000 feet, but they don't meet the rule of you have to have, for it to be a real peak, you have to have a 300-foot drop from the summit to the saddle
Oh, okay.
in between them. And so these sub summit ones don't meet that 300-foot rule, but I think the other requirement for this is that they have to have appeared in some sort of on an official map or some in one of Jerry Roach's books or something, some official seeming publication there. If they're named in there, then they tend to show up on this sub-summit list. So I don't know if there was a super formal thing on that, but at some point or another, it showed up on 14ers.com. If you go in
Yeah, I
on
did
your
see that.
checklist, you can see there's a list of, it's changed a little bit over the years. At one point it was 74, and then at one point Sunlight Spire was on the list of
I was
there.
going to
It's
ask
like,
about that. Is it still on the
ooh,
list?
yeah. It's like, I don't think I'll be able to finish that list. And then they did LIDAR and redid it and said, oh no, Sunlight Spire is, it's not a 14er. It's like, dude, I can get the list now.
Maybe.
And so now I'm basically all but done with the sub-summit list. All I have left is Southeast Longs, and I'm kind of intentionally saving that for summertime when it cleans up a little bit, so I can invite some friends to come along and have my sub-summit finisher there. It'll be a fun little day I can do. But
Is
yeah.
there like does Massive have a bunch of sub summits like that whole?
Yeah, I think only one of them shows up, I think on a maybe one or two thing. I think there's probably like I want to say like 5 points out there that are above 14,000 feet, but there's only, they don't list all of them as sub summits. And again, I don't entirely understand all the rules behind which ones count and which ones don't, but I when I was up there, I wouldn't hit them all. They're just I could say I'd done them. Although when I got my massive snowflake, I did not get is it, I think it's northeast massive or something like that, or one of the massives has been added on so that people that are going after the frozen finisher status, because of the precedent set, you have to go and get that other massive sub-summit one. And since I didn't get that when I was up there, it was like, all right, I gotta go back there, gotta get that one. So, is it? I'm still not sure if I'll actually try to go all the way on finishing the frozen finishers, but it's one of those things. It's starting to become more and more popping in my mind to where I'm giving it more and more serious consideration there. And so, I'm doing, these little things like trying out cables route and trying out some of these, class five scrambly things. And I started this winter. A couple times I slept in the back of my 4Runner to as a tiptoe into winter camping there, not as
Tiptoe.
hardcore as the actual real thing, but it's like, okay, well, it's a start. If I can overnight in my 4Runner, that's closer to winter camping than what I did before. So, and that went, reasonably well. So, but as I go along and do some of these harder routes and do a little bit of winter camping and stuff, and I'll gradually see is like, okay, do I actually want to go for this? Because some of the things like Mount of the Holy Cross, there's like no way you can do that without camping unless you're like some
Oh
absolute
yeah, it's like a
superhuman there. And Chicago Basin, same way in winter time, is like maybe some of these FKT monsters can zip out there and bang them out as a day trip, but most
no
of
way.
the
And
snow winds, he's like, you pretty much got to do some winter camping to get those. So I still got to decide if I actually want to commit that much or not. But I'm starting to tiptoe that direction and thinking, maybe.
yeah, we have an episode on our podcast. We had a guy that did the Chicago Basin in winter. It was really interesting. But I mean, the train doesn't run in winter, so you got to do the extra mileage from purgatory.
Yeah. Yep.
So it'd be an insane thing that you couldn't. You'd have to spend at least 2 days there.
Yeah, and I've been starting to work out lately with I got a old one of my old packs. I loaded it up with a bunch of water bottles and old textbooks and stuff. And so I think lately I've got it up to like 40 pounds, and I just make laps up and down the stairs, and I'll do it forward and backwards and sideways, and I'll step up and down on a chair and kneel down one knee and get back up there, and just doing all of that just to build up my leg muscles and endurance and so forth. Trying to get ready for some of those longer trips and potential long treks in with a camping backpack there. So building up the skill set.
So it sounds like you do a lot of research though, and you also add to the beta to the 14er community as far as with your trip reports, and it seems like you enjoy helping out
Yeah,
your
that's
community.
a big thing for me, is because when I was starting out, I got a huge amount of useful information just out of the route descriptions on 14ers.com, and I'd go out and look at other people's trip reports and such. And when I started writing trip reports, I tried to make my trip reports to be what I was looking for. And since that, especially at first, it was mainly for beta, as I wanted to arrange my trip reports with kind of stuff in there that I would look for when I have put up at the top. Okay, what trailhead am I using? What route am I using? What elevation gain? All that kind of stuff. And then I'll go and put section headers and like big bold letters. So if somebody wants to see, okay, the keyhole or the trough or something, you just scroll down. Okay.
Hey, how did you do Long's Tornado, man?
Yeah, so I've done longs twice. The first time I did Keyhole, and it was like, I feel like it was Labor Day weekend. You know how longs is. It was busy. My partner wasn't feeling it and turned around soon after the keyhole. You get to that that area on the ledges where there's that weird rebar rock sticking out. There's like a rebar sticking out of a
Yep.
rock. One like weird exposed move there. So she turned back, said go for it. So I was like, what the heck? I'm here. I put in this much effort. Just finish it up. So I summited, solo, if you will. solo on a Labor Day weekend, which isn't solo.
The conga line.
Yeah, there was a. I distinctly remember going down, and there was a group of people like at the top of the trough, like they had like whiskey shooters. It was just a party. I mean, you know. So we went back. I went back a few years later to do it again, you know, with the same partner, and we did. We decided to try Loft, and we did Loft, which was pretty fun. I didn't feel there was anything too crazy there. I think the big thing is, I thought the you kind of wrap a left eventually to get to the top of the loft, and it seemed obvious to me where to go left. So gaining the loft was easy, and there were some at that point there were some really well marked cairns that led across to where you kind of sneak around and on that whole other side, which is an interesting traverse. That's a whole different side of Longs that I don't think, you know, if you don't do the loft, you don't see. It's just a cool place back there. But I found there were cairns where there needed to be and had researched it a bit. So it came together well. We summited, you know, it was a great day. The weather was fine. There was no, a 0% day or pretty close to it for precip chances. So there was no worry that day, which is always nice when you're doing a long day. And then we started down and we're going to go back to the loft, and we started just a little bit towards it. And then we're like, why don't we just do the keyhole, go down the keyhole? And I was like, okay, if we go down the keyhole, we're going to have to cross the ledges and that rebar rock and that whole area. It went really smooth, except for me, because I got altitude sickness. So we were on the ledges, and I was losing the bit of food I'd managed to consume during the day. So I was the person that everyone was probably looking at going, what the heck's wrong with that guy?
Yeah,
But,
he's not.
I mean, I don't know when this was, 2015. So I'm still living in Kansas.
Oh, that's right.
And
Yeah. You didn't day trip. You had spent a couple of nights over here, didn't you?
so I can't remember exactly how it worked. I spent a night in Longmont before, but Longmont's not exactly high elevation either.
That's a good point. Did you do a
So
Meeker? Did you do Meeker on the way up the loft?
no, we were thinking about it, and we just said, let's just focus on getting longs. So I ended up doing Meeker via the loft a couple years later. And that's a fun day. I mean, it really, honestly, if I realized how short it was to get up to there from the loft, it really is pretty fast. I mean, it's only a
Oh,
few hundred vert.
did a bag Meeker on the way, yeah.
It would have been worth doing on the way. And I would encourage anyone who's has any interest in doing the Centennials or just any interest in just getting a different viewpoint, you know, anything, to just go up there, because if you know, if you're pushed for time, you know, there's weather or something, then maybe, you know, it'd be a different concern, but it's pretty fast, so it's not going to eat up a lot of your day. So yeah, we ended up doing Meeker a different time, and that was during one of the there's some big fire, so it was fine, but there was a lot of haze and smoke in the air, which I think a lot of us who've been out have experienced a few of those days by now. So knock on wood, hopefully not this next summer. Last summer seemed better, so
Yeah,
I'm
big
hoping
snow year.
we can have another one
Yeah.
that is more like that. But you know, I think the big thing with Longs is it has a lot of personality. Like we were saying, the loft's completely different than the keyhole, and then there's the other routes like Cables and, you know, Keplingers and those, and they all kind of have their own character. So, I mean, I think that's what makes it a pretty iconic mountain and why people keep going back. I mean, we all see the people who live in that area or live in Boulder and do these duathlons and do longs all the time. And, you know, despite having done it 100 times, they still love it. So,
Did you find, were you able to find Clark's Arrow? Because you're circling around there from the loft route, and you got to find that famous little Clark's Arrow before you kind of rejoin that.
We did see Clark's Arrow. Actually, we're kind of past it and looked back over my shoulder, and there it was. It's pretty faded though, and that was several years ago. I don't know if, I think it's getting harder and harder to find. I don't know if people are even, I'd have to look at recent reports. I don't know if people are just seeing it anymore.
Yeah, I think even
But
Middlebrook's description on 14ers calls it elusive.
yeah, it was there then, but it's not something that anyone should be counting as a a reference point. I'll put it that way.
It felt good though once we did find it to know we were on track though, because we were kind of like we didn't know if we were above it, below it, and you're kind of like in this ledges sort of. So
It felt the hardest part was right after you drop down off the loft and you go down a ways and you're kind of, then you're like, should I be moving over, like traversing now, or should I go down a little more? That was like the only area I remember being a little skeptical about, if things were right.
then I realized, then you go basically up the Keplinger couloir and then you actually rejoin the home stretch. So you basically make that,
Yes.
if you go up the loft and down the keyhole, you make a giant loop across the whole face of the clock, really.
I mean, it's a pretty cool day. You see a lot of different scenery doing that. If loops work out well and there's no huge surprises, which that one I knew what keyhole was going to be since doing it before, so it worked out really well to see both sides of it.
I was just gonna say, that's probably what I'll do when I go back for Southeast Longs, which will be my finisher for the 14er sub-summits. Probably going up and do longs from the loft after tagging that one.
That's Southeast Longs is interesting. I could definitely see, I don't have a vision of doing all these sub summits. It's not on my goal list, but Southeast Longs I think would be a cool perch. It's so weird when you see it from the loft. It looks like you could just walk up to the summit of Longs, because you cannot see that, that giant notch there at all, and it's just like, oh, yeah, I could just head over there. So I think it'd be cool to see the view from Southeast and look down at that and just see what it looks like right there. So I'll be curious what you think of it.
We shared the summit with Marianne, who was 84.
Oh, wow.
She had come up the
What's
cables route.
cables? Wow.
Oh, jeez. All right. What's the oldest person to do longs? There used to be records kept on that, and it was somewhere in their 80s.
I don't know. I was impressed. 84. But
That was
the guide she was with looked like he looked like he had had a long day.
so I'm reading right now, the oldest person to climb it was allegedly on his 85th birthday.
Wow. Okay.
Future goals, I guess. Keep it in mind. File that away for decades down the road.
Sunlight spire.
I've been starting to toy with doing a calendar grid on longs. I've actually got I've done five summits already, and it just so happens that all five of those summits are in different months, and
Oh, you're
so
almost
I'm
halfway
starting to get a
there.
pretty good start.
I wonder, well, how different is there avalanche risk on the loft route?
Oh, the loft itself would be for sure. Because
Yeah,
that would be
okay.
steep enough that if there's snow built in there. I don't know if I've seen of anyone doing the loft in winter.
As even like on cables, you can. I know there's at least been minor slides there, because even on that time when I came down it, there was slide debris. I mean, it was only a couple hundred feet long, kind of thing. So it's like, I don't know how necessarily dangerous it'd be, but the fact that some stuff does occasionally slide at least a little bit there is one of those things where if you had even a small slide at the wrong spot on the cables, that could get pretty ugly. So it's like, it's definitely not something that you want to just blow off entirely.
Yeah, that sounds like what you see in the avalanche forecast, where they're like terrain traps and a small avalanche that could take you over a cliff and all those things that
Just the East
that they
Bay,
warn us to try to avoid.
you know.
There's no real way to camp longs, is there? I mean, you
In
can camp in the
Boulderfield.
boulder field, but it's like windy and it's not like it's good camping, like in the trees, in a nice like fire ring and enjoy
Yeah.
like nice backcountry forest.
I think there is some
You
camping
can.
spots down low, but it's only like, what, a mile or two away from the trailhead, so it
But
doesn't
then,
gain you much.
yeah, there's some in the Goblins Forest area, but it's not very far in. I've heard mixed reviews on the boulder field stuff. To me, you're camping a little high in terms of like
Right.
altitude sickness and whatnot. It
Wind.
seems like it would be windy, noisy. I don't know, but from talking to me before that I'm not the greatest tent sleeper. So
That's right. Yeah, you.
I'm like, ew. I can't envision that personally I would get any sleep there, but others might have a better experience. But I don't know if I want to carry like heavy camping gear up to like 12-6 for a 14,000-foot summit. I just feel like, well, why don't I just get up early and summit it? But
It'd be fun just for the experience of it. I don't think it would be necessarily advantageous for the climb because of all the effort there, but it'd be a neat experience. Maybe I'll do that on when I see. I think I need what October and November on my grid slots and in the first half of the year. So yeah, maybe one of those months if I haven't gotten too snowy yet. We'll see.
Could you camp at Chasm Lake? Is there any camping at Chasm Lake?
I don't recall there being any.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been back there, but I don't recall it being a camping friendly area in my
Yeah,
limited
neither
memory
do
of the
I.
spot.
But it was like almost dark when we went through Chasm Lake. Kind of started to get light right when we were on part of the loft. Of course, we started at like, 3 in the morning. Do you have to, is there parking now? Is there permit parking or anything at the ranger
You have to have
station?
like a pass to get in, although there's usually not anybody there to check it, but I think you are supposed to have a Rocky Mountain National Park permit there.
So
Yeah.
are you in the actually in the national park
Yeah.
there? Or, well, I know you are when you're hiking, but to get in the parking lot, are you in the park?
Yeah. That's still
Okay.
part of Rocky Mountain National Park.
Got it.
And I think there's you're technically not supposed to overnight at the camp at the trailhead, although that occasionally gets overlooked.
I mean, if
I,
you're, yeah, a
I've
lot of
heard
people.
that they will bang on your car there if they see you, so, Yeah,
but
S summertime
secondhand.
I'm thinking they probably enforce it there, but wintertime I happen to know they don't necessarily always enforce it.
Oh, you're sleeping in the Forerunner. Statute of limitations.
And I
Do you
figure,
carry a sp
if you drive up to the trailhead and it just, takes you a few hours to get out of the vehicle, is that really a whole lot of difference? And
Yeah, then starting at 2:30 anyway. What's the
yeah,
difference in your cars there? Do you carry a spot device or like a rescue beacon?
I always carry a Garmin inReach with me.
InReach, okay.
But I don't think I typically don't even have it powered on, which, probably it would be more useful if I had it ready to go on and out there, but thankfully, I've never actually needed the thing, but of course, I've gotten burned before by leaving out the first aid kit and said, "Oh yeah, I won't need that. I'll save some weight." And then lo and behold, I needed one earlier this year, so I was like, "Yeah, maybe I'll start carrying that again."
What do you think about the bullseyes? Is that a contentious thing in the 14er community? The painted bullseyes on the all that rock on Longs?
I mean, some people complain about it, but for me, yeah, I appreciated them being there. Makes it easier, especially like in wintertime when it was harder to find the route. Some of them were covered up, but some of them were sticking out. It's like when you do see that, it's like, oh, hey, that's
Reassuring.
kind of nice there. And especially with it being one of the more popular peaks, being out in the Front Range, and a whole lot of folks going out there that maybe that shouldn't necessarily be going on a peak like that. That it's helps prevent a lot of search and rescue trips, I think, by having it on there. But yeah, the leave no trace folks that are on the extreme side will. There are some people that freak out about that kind of stuff. But anyway, I don't think I'd want to see that like on every mountain out there. But
Right.
I don't have a problem with a major and popular peak like Longs. I think it's probably a good thing on there.
I think it's a double-edged sword. I mean, you could, I've seen people argue that people are more likely to continue who don't belong there because they see them and feel reassured. And I'm like, well, maybe. And it's, I don't love the lack of LNT, but I'm not, I'm not strong on it on that particular peak. If we started throwing them everywhere, like I've argued against the whole let's throw multiple signs on Capitol and multiple signs on Crestone Needle and the various things that come up from time to time. I don't know. I think there's a point where you have to do your research, but I think longs by its nature being in the park
Yeah.
and getting whatever amount of visitors it is a year, 3 million, something like that. It's going to have a lot of people that just decide to go up there. I guess that might probably prevents a few people from getting lost every year.
You did yours. That was your first 14er, which is not, I would not recommend. Like, Longs was my 54th of the 58. So I saved it for the last summer, after 9 years of doing all the other ones. And I had worked up to class three, worked up to, doing Pyramid and Maroon Bells and got Capitol under my belt. And when did you do, what number it was for you, Tornado Man?
It was in the 20s. If I had to guess, like 24 or something, I'd done Wetterhorn, Kelso Ridge, Sneffels. So I'd done some, moderate ones at least. So I felt I was prepared for it. But I mean, I think the big thing with longs, if you're doing keyhole, the factor that people can forget is when you cross onto the north side, it is a different world. When you step through the keyhole, it is way colder, it's way windier, and the terrain is, way more dangerous. I think that's a, I think it's in Jerry Roach's book, but it's kind of a good time to just go, okay, how do I feel?
And what's
Do I
the
feel like I
weather?
have a lot of energy left? Are there some cumulus clouds that are building quite a bit because it's still going to take me quite a while? What's going on? I think that's the way people get in trouble on that peak. I remember the first time stepping through that keyhole, I couldn't believe how windy it was. And it was getting funneled a bit, and it wasn't nearly as bad after stepping, taking 20 steps onto the toward the ledges, but it definitely was a different world from the other side. And I think that's the only other peak I've experienced where I feel the weather changes that dramatically. And this is another one that Jerry Roach nailed, was on Dallas
Willis,
Peak.
oh, duh.
When you, he says on Dallas, he's like, now you're on the north side of Dallas and you'll feel the cold wind rush up your pants. And I was like, ha ha ha, nice comment, Jerry. It was a nice warm day, crossed to that north side, about a 20 mile an hour wind gusting up right up your pants. I'm like, there's like hail accumulated on the ledges left over, and I'm like, oh, it is cold. And that's kind of what reminds me of longs, how quickly it kind of shifts right at that point. Kind of an inflection point from where you're like, oh, this is legit. And winter comes early up there, so.
Where's the turnaround point? Like, where's the I get spooked, I can't go any further point? Is it before the ledges? Is it right by the ledges? Is it the narrow section? What's the spookiest?
I think that's an interesting call, and I think it might depend on your perception. I'm trying to think of m moves that were hard. I thought the most one of the more exposed spots is that weird rebar rock on the ledges. Then after that, the ledges didn't seem as bad. The narrows bother some people and not others.
This is the drop off there on the
Yeah, I wasn't bothered by the narrows, but I know some people are.
wasn't
I think there's
bothered
a
in
few different
summer,
places you can turn around.
but at what point did you have a tr like this is a little sketchy doing it in the winter? Was it the narrow section, David?
That first time I made it across the ledges, and like I said, that first one I had the old floppy boots and the strap-on crampons, and I kicked my crampons off one of them like twice going across the ledges, but and it was just hanging on by the strap, and I managed to grab it and hobble over to a rock and reattach it, but that didn't turn me back. There, I kept going past that and kept going up the trough, but when I got up to the narrows and saw that was totally packed in at a 45 degree angle, and I just had those not so reliable strap-on crampons. That's when I was like, okay, nope, I can't do this with this kind of gear, and I had to come back the following week with the proper gear to tackle it.
If you had to like pick and choose pieces of other 14ers to describe, like cobble together longs, how would you describe the Boulder Field, or what's comparable across the 14er whole journey at the Boulder Field? What's comparable to the ledges? What's comparable to the home stretch? I mean, the home stretch is similar to, I think, what Wetterhorn.
Wetterhorn has the nice, perfect little stair step things on there, which to me, to me belongs. That I don't know that. Of course, I've done now a few wintery climbs recently, but I don't really recall Long's feeling that much like a Class 3 peak, to be honest. It's like like the trough and stuff. You're mostly just walking up it, and maybe there's a little move or two at the top of that, and even the home stretch is like most of the time, even like with the winter time, I was on my feet and trekking poles in the hand. There was no like scrambling. Whereas Wetterhorn, you get up to that Class 3 section, I'm actually raising my hands up there, grabbing onto this and hopping up onto that. It really Longs doesn't has never felt all that much like a scrambly peak. It's more like more of a walking up kind of peak for the most part. Maybe here and there on the trough or the home stretch, you might occasionally use your hands a bit, but it I didn't I've never really felt Longs to be as much of a scramble as say, like the Crestones. I think was the first time I did a peak that I really felt like I was actually like climbing a mountain because I was gauging hands and feet kind of thing. That was maybe midway through or so of my 14er journey, but Longs, my first one, was like I don't know, it just walked the mountain.
I think that's interesting because I would say that outside of the move at the top of the trough, you get on some big boulder to get on the narrows. I'm trying to remember, it's been quite a few years. And then there's a bit of a short scramble to get out of the narrows onto the home stretch. Home stretch itself, I mean, steep. I would definitely say it's easy, class three. I'll put it that way. I'd actually compare the home stretch to kind of like the Red Gully on Crestone, actually.
Preston.
I didn't think either of them was that steep. It's kind of hard to compare it to other peaks. It is pretty unique as far as 14ers go.
I guess the only thing it's maybe sort of kind of a little bit reminiscent of the Narrows is like a Kit Carson Avenue, maybe has a
Okay,
little bit of that feel.
yeah, that's probably fair.
But yeah, if you're somebody that's my brother is afraid of heights, and many years ago I got him to go up Longs with me, and he was like, it literally took him years to psych himself up just for the Narrows section there because of his issue with the heights. And he got up there and managed to get through it. And well, funny thing is, I had done it before, and my memory at the time going is okay, you do the Narrows and you pop around the corner, you just hop up on the summit, and that was how it was left in my head. And well, we did it in summer with him. We got him across the Narrows, okay, and then we turn around the corner to the home stretch, and you look up, and there's like this little tiny row of ants going up to the summit. And it's like, oh, that's all the summer turns. I guess that's a little bigger and steeper than I remembered. He was about ready to throw me off the mountain at that point. He was like, you told me it was just around the corner. Hop up there. Like, well, that's how I remembered it. I guess it's a little more than that.
It's funny how your memory remembers things. I was amazed how big the summit was. I mean,
Oh, yeah.
like a football field, like.
Well, I've always thought it'd be kind of funny if somebody actually went up there and like played a football game or something. I mean, it's literally huge enough you could probably do that.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to throw around a frisbee or something up there. It'd be cool. Might catch a little wind though, and you end up really messing up the L&T accidentally. But it's surprising. I mean, I guess when you're climbing it, it feels surprising, but when you look at Longs from certain angles, you can see it. You're like, oh, that looks like a big flat area at the top of that peak. But when you get up there after the stuff that's a little tougher and slow going, and then all of a sudden you're just on this huge flat area with 100 of your closest friends. Guess that's one reason winter could be good is you don't have 100 of your closest friends, so.
Was definitely a solo experience there at the top for the winter climb.
Did you bonk at all? Because I remember like even getting down below the boulder field and thinking like, okay, I'm I feel like we're almost there, but it's way longer from the boulder field back to the car than I thought.
Oh yeah. That one, I think it was the spring trip, but well, no, it was the winter summit where I actually made it up the whole way. Is like I got by the time I got to the keyhole on the way up, I just bonked big time. It's like I crashed in a little shelter there for probably half an hour or so, and I was almost thinking, I was like, oh, okay, I'm not gonna make it. I'm gonna have to bail again. But then after resting there for a good long while and get some more food and drink, it's like I got revived again and went on up and got the summit. But then the time I got back down to that the keyhole again, I was dead. I was wiped out and crashed in the shelter again. But I actually had a cell phone signal there, so I was able to send out a few messages. Hey, you made it. It's going to be a long way back, but I got in there. And then after that, going down, it's like I think that took me what like I think it was an 18-hour day that time, which is like ridiculous there. But it was like I kept the whole way down. I was like I go for a while and go for a while. Of course, I think I was also had too much laying around eating junk food over the holidays and whatnot, so I wasn't quite in the peak condition. So I've been working on that lately to get myself in better shape for these things. But yeah, that even under the best conditions, that long, even in summer, is a long day. And in winter, you add a little bit of trouncing through snow and all that other challenges and stuff, and it's a big undertaking.
Oh, I think it's at least a 12-hour day for the pretty fit person in the summer. I think we got started at 3:15 from the Ranger station, and we probably weren't got down till 3-ish. And then we went to Lyons and grabbed a beer, and that was probably one of the best beers I've ever had there at oh, what's that? Dale's Pale Ale. What is that brewery? Oscar Blues. But one beer after Long's was amazing. What's one piece of advice you give someone has kind of fear in Long's, doesn't know whether they can do it? What's your advice for them?
I would say, first of all, just make sure your fitness is, reasonably good. So you've done some other peaks that year, you've been up high a bit. So you know that you can do it. Then just it's just gonna be one foot in front of the other, but pick a good weather day. It's too long a day, you're too exposed up there to be battling the storms and having that in your mind. So pick a good weather day where you can really increase your chance of success. Slow but surely you can get it done.
And I would add, check the wind forecast. That's a piece that a lot of people overlook that, but especially on longs, the wind, and more so if you're coming up in winter or even spring or anything like that, that the winds up there get just absolutely psychotic. It's not uncommon to see over 100 mile an hour winds up on the summit, and you do not want to be up there when the wind's blowing that gut. So don't just look for thunderstorms or whatnot, but take a peek at what the wind gusts are supposed to get up to you. And if you see it getting above, say, like 50 miles an hour or so, probably a good day to do something lower altitude.
I was pleased with doing the loft and down the keyhole. I think that was a clever way to do both sides of it. But I would make sure you print out the route description, so you can check, make sure you're on route. But
Yeah,
I
I
mean.
always carry GPX with me, and I'll download the GPX track, so and I'll turn on the tracking so at any given moment I can see where I am in relation to the route.
Perfect. Yeah, and I'll just highlight, I mean, any day you're doing more than 5,000 feet of gain, it's a big day. So yeah, the condition thing is a big part of. I think you did it right. Do a Kelso Ridge, do a Crestone, do a Wetterhorn. If you can handle them, I think you can handle Longs.
And pace yourself. It's real easy, especially longs at the beginning, is that it's a pretty easy trail, and so it's tempting to just powerhouse out of the gate there, and then you end up whooping yourself before you get to the tricky stuff. So I recommend just take a nice slow steady pace at the beginning, and just hit a pace that you can hold for the rest of the day, and that way by the time you get up to the boulder field, you still got gas in the tank, and you can make it through all the challenging stuff.
Thanks a lot for taking 2 hours on a Tuesday and giving us some advice.
Sure. Thank you for inviting me.
Cool. I'll follow up and hopefully I see you again and not see you out there in person sometime.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Cool. Have a good night.
Cheers.